One of the facts of life is that each of us will die someday, and everything we have will be left behind, including our debts. So who will have to pay those debts? Hi, I'm Rob West. First today, we'll be talking about debt after life, then how it can affect your loved ones and beneficiaries. This is an important matter, so don't ignore it. Then we'll go to your calls, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Often on Mondays, as we begin our broadcast week, we focus on foundational matters related to finances. And I'll remind you of our teaching model that's centered around the five basic things you can do with your money. You can earn it, live on it, give it away, owe it to someone or the government, and you can grow it by investing. That is earn, live, give, owe, and grow. It's pretty easy to remember. And today we're focusing on owing money and on a particular aspect of that topic that perhaps you haven't thought about, namely, what happens to your debts when you die? Of course, those debts won't be of much concern to you at that point, but they could be of great concern to those you leave behind. Many people assume that when they pass away, their debts will be written off by creditors and not collected. Well, that is true with regard to some debts, but it is the exception, not the rule. The U.S. government does write off federal school loans when the person who owes the money dies, and that extends to PLUS loans parents take out for their children's education. In fact, if either a parent or the student dies, the loan is written off. One other possible exception is small medical debts. Sometimes medical providers will write those off, but they are under no obligation to do so. As for other kinds of debt, those obligations do not go away. They'll be assigned to other people who will become responsible for paying them, or they'll be paid from the proceeds of your estate. I'll explain that in a moment. But first, you need to understand that there are two types of debt, secured debt and unsecured. A secured debt is anything that has collateral, that is, something the creditor could take and sell to pay the debt if it came to that. Secured debt includes things such as a home mortgage or a car loan. A creditor could foreclose on a house or repossess a car. Those are secured debts. In contrast, unsecured debt has no collateral. Credit cards fall into that category. Typically, a secured debt will pass to a beneficiary. If your spouse becomes the sole owner of the house when you pass away and you still have a mortgage on it, he or she will be responsible for continuing the payments. If you bequeath your car to a loved one and it still has a loan on it, the beneficiary will have to either take over the payments or refuse the vehicle. As for unsecured debts, such as credit cards, those debts will not pass to a loved one unless that person is a joint account holder. If the person is simply an authorized user but not a joint account holder, that person won't be responsible for the debt. Now, in most cases, credit card debt will be paid from your estate. Estate is a legal term for the assets you leave behind, such as cash in a bank account or maybe a set of tools or collectibles you own. To satisfy the creditors, the executor of your estate will have to pay the bills from those assets. That could involve selling things you left behind to generate enough cash to clear the debts. When settling an estate, creditors are first in line legally. They get paid before anyone else. That means fewer resources will be left for your heirs or to give away to your church or a charity. Fortunately, some assets are not considered a part of your estate, including life insurance proceeds and retirement accounts with named beneficiaries. Those are protected against creditors. Now, let me say a word about medical-related debt. In most cases, a survivor is not directly responsible for that unless he or she co-signed a form pledging financial responsibility. However, laws relating to how debts are handled after death vary from state to state. 9 states in the U.S. are what are known as community property states, in which marital assets are jointly owned. Medical debt may be handled differently in those states. Now, I've only given you a general lay of the land regarding what happens to debts after a person dies. It may be wise to consult an estate attorney if you have specific concerns about how debts will be dealt with based on the state you live in or your particular financial situation. You certainly don't want your loved ones taken by surprise in this area. I hope that helps you clear up some of the misconceptions you may have had about how debt is handled after death. Next up, your calls on any financial topic. The number to call, 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back.
On American Family Radio, hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm a layman here to remind you that faith sharing is a barometer for your spiritual health.
A close friend recently told me he'd asked hundreds of people what they most like to talk about. So I asked how many people said God, and he said only one. Only one out of hundreds of people said they most like to talk about God? That alone explains why we're in such deep trouble. At the very moment when we need God more than ever, no one wants to talk about him. This is the God who spoke the universe into being, created us in his image, cares about our every need, and wants us to spend eternity with him. And yet, we have more important things to talk about? God help us. The truth is, we talk most about what we love most and are most excited about. If you're not telling people about Jesus, you're not excited about Jesus. And quite frankly, you're not excited about leading your friends to Jesus. And that is a problem. If you need help sharing your faith, go to igniteamerica.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
Exploring the Word. I think it's wiser to lay the issue out before God than to tell God what to do.
That's very wise, and it takes a level of trust to do that.
I trust you, Lord. Makes me think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. God, you're able to deliver us from this fiery, burning furnace. But if not, we're still not going to bow down. We trust you no matter what.
Join Bert Harper and Alex McFarland weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
At MoneyWise, we are on a mission to educate, equip, and connect you and many others with the powerful financial answers found in God's Word through national radio programs, our app, website, and other resources. If you've benefited from MoneyWise and believe in this mission, would you consider becoming a monthly MoneyWise patron? Check out all the benefits of a MoneyWise patron's membership at moneywise.org and click Give on the homepage.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Looking forward to taking your calls and questions today on anything financial. 800-525-7000. We have lines open, 800-525-7000. In addition to your calls today, we'll tackle a few listener emails. Catherine wants to know about tithing on the sale of her home. Deanna found some inaccurate information on her Experian credit report, wanting to know how to get it removed. And Janet asking about the pros and cons of a living trust. We'll tackle those. Great questions a little later in the broadcast. Also joining us today, Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. I'll tell you, with the market volatility as of late, always appreciate Bob's insights. We'll get an update on what he's watching this week as investors are weighing the earnings reports that are coming out, plus more inflation data. It seems like inflation is always front and center these days. Of course, the Fed is as well. We'll get Bob to weigh in on all of it in our final segment of the broadcast. Again, your questions today, 800-525-7000 is the number to call. Before we head to the phones, let me ask you a question. Are you struggling with credit card debt, but you don't know where to start? You know, so many folks are, especially now with the average American family spending $500 more per month in light of inflation on just basic needs. Unfortunately, if they were living paycheck to paycheck without an emergency fund to kind of help to provide a buffer, a lot of folks, unfortunately, having to turn to the credit cards, which as interest rates rise and these variable rates go up with it, that's becoming more and more challenging just because of the sheer cost of the interest. Well, our trusted partner, Christian Credit Counselors, offers a debt management program that can get you out of debt 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. Their faith-based mission will also consider your values and goals as a Christian, too. They've worked with hundreds and hundreds of our listeners. This is my preferred solution. I would say if you have more than $4,000 in credit card debt, that's where I would look to a debt management program. It's not factored into your credit score. The accounts will be closed, and you will get out of debt quicker because of the reduction in interest rate and that fixed monthly payment that fits right into your budget. If you have less than $4,000, I'd probably just try to do it on your own and snowball it, smallest to largest balance. Take every bit of extra margin once you have at least $1,500 in an emergency fund, and focus on the account with the lowest balance. And then just try to knock those out one at a time. Why the smallest balance, not the highest interest rate? Well, studies will show that's going to give you the momentum you need to keep going. And the goal is to get them all paid off. And if that's going to help you stay the course because you see some early wins as you eliminate each of these credit cards, then I'd say that's the better approach. So consider that as you think about getting out of credit card debt. ChristianCreditCounselors.org is the place to go if you want to learn more or check out whether a debt management program can work for you. All right, the number to call today for your calls and questions, 800-525-7000. We'll begin today in Columbus, Ohio. Diane, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi, Rob. Thank you. And I did have two other questions that came to mind while I was on hold, if there's time. But
okay.
that always happens, right?
Yes. No problem.
Yes. So we have two daughters. One is 18, one is 23, married, and a couple of kids. And we have an UGMA account for the 18-year-old.
Yeah.
Which transfers to her own. She's in college full-time, so...
Sure.
Do we need to do anything with that? I had received a notice from our bank because they noted that she turned 18. And so,
yes. Yeah. So 18 is the age of majority there in Ohio. So the child now has access to the adult now has access to the funds in the UGMA custodial account. That can be converted just to an individual account if she wants to leave that money there and continue to invest it or just let it sit until she needs it, or it can be withdrawn. But, you know, that is the reality with these custodial accounts. UGMA, just a technical term, Uniform Gift to Minors Act, but essentially a custodial account where at the age of majority, the asset does become a sole asset of the minor who has now turned 18 and become an adult. So I would say it just depends on what she plans to do with it. If she's pulling it out, she can access it right away. If she's going to leave it there, probably want to go ahead and convert it to an individual account in her name, and then maybe walk alongside her as you think about and she thinks about how to invest it moving forward, given the time horizon on the money.
Okay. And there are no tax consequences?
No, the only tax consequences would just be in the, you know, if there's any gains in the account as each of these assets are liquidated. It's not a retirement account. There's no tax deferral. You're realizing those taxes as you go.
Okay. Okay. Second question, and then two more after that, if possible. We have also IRAs for them.
And yes.
My older daughter, they're wanting to... by God's grace, we taught them tithing and, you know, financial responsibility early on. So they're both in very good condition. But they're wanting to build a house. They bought a little house that they fixed up. They're going to sell it, make a good profit. Her husband's a contractor. But they're wanting to build a house. We have some property that we're either going to sell a portion of it to them or gift it to them. We haven't decided yet. But, you know, just wanting to, there is an IRA. It's, I think, just a couple thousand dollars. But how would we properly go about transferring that to her and her husband? And also, you know, we may do a financial gift as well. So that's kind of a loaded question.
Yeah. So with regard to the IRA, I mean, those are individual IRAs. So those are not custodial. They have to be created in the child's name initially. And as long as the child has earned income, essentially they or you could fund it, which obviously happened. And so it's already in their name. There's nothing that has to be done. The question is whether you want to leave it with the current custodian or move it to another custodian of their choosing. And so at any point, it could be transferred to another institution. But with regard to an IRA, because it was in their name from the very beginning, there's nothing that has to be done now that they have, you know, turned beyond the age of majority.
Yeah, because I'm not even sure she knows that we did it. It's in our TD Ameritrade account. That's just where we, you know, are currently parking everything.
Yeah.
So if we just told her, yes, we have this IRA, do you want to transfer it to your bank? Then we would just do the paperwork to accomplish that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I think that'll be good news. Like, you know, listen, we started this for you. We really think the power of compounding works most effectively over time. Guess what? If you continue to contribute to this, throughout the next 40 years, you know, you'll have well over $1 million in this portfolio that could be used to supplement your retirement. And so, you know, right now there's no obligation to continue to do that, but you know, the earlier you start that, the better. And then just find out, you know, how they want to approach that and essentially where you want to house it and how you're going to manage it. Are you going to use a robo advisor, or are you going to pick the funds, or they, do you want to just use index funds, whatever it might be? But it can stay right where it is. You just let them know that it's there. And if one of you wants to make a change with regard to who the custodian is and how it's managed, that would be the only reason why you'd need to make any change whatsoever. Otherwise, you can just stay put with it. I appreciate your call today, Diana. Hope that helps you. We appreciate you listening to the program. 800-525-7000. We've got lines open. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
45,000. That's how many times MoneyWise referred a listener to a Certified Kingdom Advisor, or CKA, last year. And for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure they provide biblically wise financial advice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to moneywise.org and clicking the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
American Family Association President Tim Wildman.
Dad was concerned about the direction America was headed, and he was determined to
to do something about it. Maybe that describes you today. If it does, I want to strongly encourage you to consider a charitable gift annuity to American Family Association Foundation.
Call the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the MoneyWise program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio, where we apply God's wisdom from the Bible to your financial decisions and choices. I'm Rob West, your host, taking your questions at 800-525-7000. Just before the break, we were talking to Diane. Diane, we had to hit a break there, but I understand you had a follow-up question, and you go right ahead.
Okay, thank you so much. Yes, so I think you finished answering my question on the IRAs. So we have the other two questions are, my husband and I have no debt except for a mortgage, and I think it's right around $70,000 or $80,000, and it's a very low interest rate. Should we pay that off?
So let's talk about the rest of your financial life. So are you on track with regard to retirement savings as far as you know, Diane?
Yes.
Okay. And do you all have an emergency fund separate from that, liquid savings of at least 2 to 3 months expenses?
Yes.
Okay, great. And if you were to pay off the mortgage, where would those funds come from?
My mother passed away and there was money in her estate. So
okay. Yeah.
It would come.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your mom's passing, but that certainly makes sense.
Thank you.
What is the balance on that mortgage?
It's about $80,000, I think. I'm not at home, so
yeah,
I don't
that's
have
fine.
It in front of me.
And what do you think the interest rate is roughly?
I think we're at like 3.75.
Okay, yeah, very good. And how far are you guys from retirement, roughly?
Well, my husband claims that he's never going to retire, but yeah. I'm 60. My husband is 62, so
okay, great.
He's a contractor with his own business, and you know, so.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I love the idea of paying that thing off. You know, if it was going to put you in a situation where it would deplete either your emergency reserves or take away from your ability to contribute to retirement, that might slow me down. At the very least, I'd love for that to be paid off by the time you all think about transitioning to the next season where, you know, you're not working, either of you or both of you, and that allows us to keep our income as low as possible. But if you've got these excess surplus funds that came from that inheritance, you're on track for retirement, you've got emergency reserves, there would be some that would tell you, Diane, no, the interest rate's low enough, you need to take that money and put it to work. And sure, you could make a case for that financially, but what about the non-financial side of this, just being unencumbered, having complete flexibility, lowering your lifestyle so you have more margin? I mean, all of that gives greater peace of mind. And I can tell you, I've been doing this a long time. I've never had anybody call me after the fact and say, Rob, I just wish we wouldn't have paid off our mortgage. I just don't get that call, Diane. So I would say if you all have the ability to do it in light of the circumstances you're describing, I'd say go for it. There wouldn't be anything wrong with not doing it if one or both of you thought, you know, we'd just like to hang on to this and keep our, you know, powder dry, so to speak, keeping the cash available. But if you're both on board with it, I certainly love the idea of you all getting completely out of debt.
Okay, great. And then last question, I had alluded to the fact that we have an older daughter and her husband who are wanting to build a house, and we have some land very near where they live, which we were going to build on at some point. I just don't know when that's going to happen. They need 3 acres to build. We have 16, and we're just discussing whether we should sell it to them so they have some proverbial skin in the game, do, you know, just whatever they can afford to pay us monthly, or should we consider gifting it to them? And what would that look like? Would probably, if we were going to sell it to them, we would probably do like a land contract.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of benefits financially to selling, and that really has to do with the cost basis of this property. Because if you gift it to them, it's not going to reset the cost basis. And therefore, when they ultimately go to sell it, they'll have to look at the original cost basis. Now, if it's their primary residence, then they'll get any kind of exclusions available for that. Right now, that stands at $500,000 for a married couple worth of gain. But that's just one consideration. The second consideration is just that this would be recorded as a gift in anything over than $16,000 from each you and your husband, so $32,000. Would have to be reported to the IRS as a gift, and then it would come off of your your lifetime gift exclusion, which is north of $11 million. So you probably wouldn't have to worry about that other than just disclosing it to the IRS. There wouldn't be any taxes due on it. So I think, you know, really from a financial standpoint, as long as you understand the cost basis side of this, then really the rest is non-financial in terms of just what you said. Do you all feel like it is better for them to have some skin in the game? Do you want them to kind of make an investment in this? If you sell it below market value, anything that is, reduced out of the selling price below market value would be considered a gift as well. So just recognize that. Again, it's more of a reporting function than anything, but you just have to make sure that you acknowledge that before the IRS that you're giving them a discount. So I think you all just need to think and pray through kind of what is it you're trying to accomplish. Is this something you truly want to make a gift to them and bless them with that? Or is this something you want to, you know, make a blessing in their life by making, you know, accommodating the financing and so forth, but you see value in them, again, having some skin in the game, as you said. I could go both directions. It's really just what you all are trying to accomplish, what your financial position is, what theirs is, and then what you think will ultimately lead to the best outcomes.
Okay. So on the $16,000 gift limit, if we decided to give them a cash gift and wrote checks for $15,000, there would be no reporting needed, no tax consequences for either us or them.
That's true. Yeah. And there would not be any tax consequences even if you went above that. All you have to do is just report it to the IRS above $16,000 per person per year. And that goes against your lifetime exclusion, which, as I said, is north of $11 million. So if you're trying to avoid having to report it, then you'd want to stay under that. But otherwise, there's still no tax consequences for you or them, even if you go above it, as long as you just disclose it and it goes against your lifetime exclusion. Make sense?
Okay. Perfect. It does. Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome, Diane. Thanks for calling. Reed and Kathy, we're coming your way just around the corner. Thanks for your patience. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio, where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. 800-525-7000. Stick around.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
Airing the Addisons.
Sherry B. and J. Mac are on tap to help us navigate the show. Well, the great, where do we go next?
All right, let's go to Brad in Arkansas. Hi, Brad.
Good afternoon. I enjoy your show, as always.
Applying scripture to life.
You can talk about anything that we have discussed this week, or maybe something that you want to bring to our attention. If we don't know about it, we're just going to tell you we don't know about it. You know, and then you'll just have to, you know, judge me. I'm sorry.
Airing the Addisons. Weekdays at 2 Central on American Family Radio.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't have had the procedure I needed without CHM's help sharing the bills. That letter from a member displays Christian Healthcare Ministries' purpose to glorify God and serve His people. CHM is the original non-insurance voluntary health cost-sharing ministry, enabling its members to share the cost of each other's medical bills. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
When it comes to caring for your family, there's one critically important thing many people fail to do before the Lord calls them home. That one thing is to set your house in order. Organize important documents and account information for your loved ones. Create a will and more. If it sounds intimidating, don't worry. The 5-week Set Your House in Order study makes it easy with step-by-step instructions. And you can request your copy with your gift of $25 or more at moneywise.org/house.
Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, a growing national network of pastors committed to the authority of Scripture and preaching the whole counsel of God. We believe biblical obedience is the foundation for revival, and impacting our culture for Christ is our duty. For too long, the pulpits of America have been silent on the important issues such as marriage and family and assault on our liberty. Join us in the battle for truth on Stand in the Gap weekend, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. on American Family Radio, and visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.org.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. We're taking your calls and questions today on anything financial. What's on your mind? We'd love to hear from you. We'll get you on the air quickly at 800-525-7000. We have a few lines open. Coming up in our final segment of the broadcast today, Bob Dahl stops by to weigh in on the markets and the economy. Market basically flat today, trying to decide which direction to go as we await more inflation data as well as more earnings data to come. Bob will weigh in on all of it, and we'll look forward to his insights. All right, back to the phones to Arkansas. Reed, you're next on the program, sir. Go ahead. Hey, Reed.
For your advice.
Yes, sir.
A few weeks back, you talked about a health savings account.
Yeah.
And I meet the threshold for that, but my company funds an HRA to the tune of $1,500 a year. Can I have both?
Yes, you actually can have both. So HRAs, for the benefit of our audience, are employer-funded plans that pay back or reimburse employees for qualified medical expenses and sometimes health insurance premiums. Unlike an HSA, HRAs are not bank accounts. They're an agreement between the employee and the employer. Yes, you can have both. However, in order to have both, you have to have the HSA qualified high deductible health plan. So for this year, Reed, that's a deductible of $1,400 for an individual, $2,800 for a family, and you can't be covered under another health insurance that's not an HDHP, a high deductible health plan. Additionally, your HSA has to be compatible with your HSA. So this typically means you'll have to be eligible for reimbursement under what's called a limited purpose HRA. And that means that in the years that the contributions are made to your HSA, the HRA can only be used to reimburse certain expenses, premiums, dental expenses, vision expenses, preventative care like checkups, and other types of premiums. So these are both used to pay health insurance and healthcare costs, but they're both very different. So be sure to consider your healthcare needs and any kind of budgetary restrictions before you make the decision, ultimately. But you absolutely can have both in the way that I described.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, Reed, thanks for listening and calling today, sir. We appreciate it. 800-525-7000. Let's see. We're going to head to Oklahoma. Kathy, you're next on the program. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to touch base. A couple of years ago, I transferred some funds over to get biblically responsible, and I bought the Timothy funds. And I have TPHD, TPLC, and I accidentally got TPIF. I'm visually impaired, so I didn't mean to really get that one. I started out with about $80,000. I put about $50,000 in a money market and invested about $35,000. My husband was laid off off and on for a couple of years through COVID, so we ended up having to use about $30,000 that was in the money market. He has an annuity. I didn't want him to take anything out of his investments when mine was sitting there in the money market. But anyway, I was told a couple of years ago just to start taking my dividends off of them funds. And I'm wondering now if I shouldn't put them dividends and just have them go back into the funds to get more stock. And also, when I took those out, TPLE and TPHE wasn't available. So I'm wondering, am I still okay with the HD and the LC and the IF?
Yeah. So a big picture here, Kathy, I would say I love Timothy Funds. They're certainly a wonderful fund family, and they do take a faith-based investing approach with everything that they do. I like the idea that during this period where the market is down pretty significantly, you would, if you have the ability, take and roll, you know, reinvest those dividends and buy more shares, because as the market recovers, and I believe it will, and this is not an opportunity to try to time the market and try to get out, wait on the sideline, and then jump back in, because as we all know, and we experienced this during the pandemic, and we've seen this many, many times, and historically, the market will recover ahead of the economy, and you know, nobody can pick the time or the place, and so you just want to be consistent in your dollar cost averaging during a season like this, where a lot of folks are kind of pulling out and heading for the hills. This is a time to, I think, to stay methodical and disciplined in your investing, and you'll be rewarded for it down the road. In terms of the actual funds, you know, we don't give specific stock recommendations or mutual fund recommendations on this program. I would just say this fund family is a good one. We certainly, you know, want you to look at all of the available options and make sure that you're invested in a way that is properly diversified and appropriate in terms of the asset mix for your age and risk tolerance. And, you know, if you need some help with that, you could connect with a certified Kingdom advisor at our website, moneywise.org, and have somebody look at your situation, your assets, your investable assets, where you are vis-a-vis retirement, and what the right mix is. And, you know, somebody who understands a faith-based investing approach would certainly be supportive of what you're trying to do here. But I think you're right on in terms of your thinking, and I would, you know, get some wise counsel with regard to the specific investment choices.
Okay. I also wanted to ask, my husband wants to retire next year. He'll be 64. He has a pension and an annuity. And all we owe for is our house at 3.75, and we owe about $45,000 on it. He wants to take money out of that annuity and pay the house off. And I think since that's all we owe for, and I just think we should just keep making the house payment until we get it paid for. What do you think?
How long do you have left on your current payback?
It's actually 10 years. I've been trying to pay more on it, but he got laid off, and I've been trying to build our emergency fund back up. So we paid our car off, and I was going to start making a house payment with the car payment, but with things that's gone up, he drives an hour and a half each way to work. So we're spending a lot of funds on gas and stuff, and I'm just trying to put that money back in the emergency fund.
Yeah. Well, I don't like creating a large taxable event if you don't have to. I mean, I love getting that mortgage paid off, and I would aggressively pursue that. I'd probably try to do that out of current cash flow as opposed to using retirement assets. But if you get to retirement and, you know, his income drops and, you know, it wouldn't put you up in a higher tax bracket for a portion of it, you know, trying to accelerate that and using a portion of that annuity, especially if it's not earning a whole lot, I think could make some sense to try to get that 10 years down to, you know, let's say 2 or 3. But I wouldn't do it kind of all at once unless you all just had a real conviction to be out of debt as soon as possible.
Okay. All right. I really appreciate your show, your simplicity, your way you explain things. It's awesome. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And God bless you guys. And if we can help you along the way, don't hesitate to reach out. Well, before we hit our next break, let's hit a quick email. Andy will be coming your way in the next segment of the broadcast. This question comes to us from Deanna, and she writes, "We have inaccurate information on our Experian credit report. How do we get it removed?" First of all, Deanna, good job on checking that credit report. By the way, folks, if you're not checking your credit reports from all three bureaus at least a couple of times a year, I would encourage you to do that. Annualcreditreport.com is the way to do that at no cost. And you are absolutely, when you do that, looking for inaccurate information, accounts that are not yours, information that's out of date. And if you see that, as Deanna has, you want to dispute it. The Fair Credit Reporting Act requires these bureaus, when you dispute any negative information, to either verify it within 30 days or delete it. Online, when you get access to that credit report, you'll initiate a dispute at the Experian Dispute Center. There's no cost for doing that. You can also call the toll-free number to initiate a dispute on the Experian credit report. And, you know, I would absolutely do that and then follow up to make sure that they get it corrected or removed. Deanna, thanks for writing to us. We'll be right back on MoneyWise. Stay with us.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Some things are just impossible, like flying without a plane or helicopter. No matter how hard we try, humans are limited to the ground and the water, gravity. Ever thought about the first person to go up in a hot air balloon? What a feeling that must have been, to be free, up in the sky with the birds. But even though we are limited, chained to this earth, unless we use some sort of machine, we can have confidence. The Word of God is not limited like we are. Remember Jesus Christ, raised from the dead, descended from David. This is my gospel, for which I am suffering, even to the point of being chained like a criminal. But God's word is not chained. Get Anchor devotional in print monthly. Visit getanchor.com.
Siri, what's the best way to save for college?
I'm not sure.
Well, what does the Bible say about co-signing for a loan or investing for retirement?
I don't know that either, but you can find those answers on the free MoneyWise app.
Really?
Sure. You can connect with the online community and get answers and encouragement from MoneyWise coaches.
That sounds great. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Got it. Learn more at MoneyWise.org.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
Delighted to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Taking your calls and questions, 800-525-7000. Before we head back to the phones, Bob Dahl joins us each Monday with his Dahl's Deliberations. Bob's a Wall Street veteran, a fellow Christ follower, and chief investment officer at Crossmark Global Investments, where investments and values intersect. And Bob, seems like the market can't figure out which direction to go this morning. Obviously, inflation data, we're looking for that. We're still watching earnings rolling in, and, well, the Fed's always in the background. What are you looking at this week?
All of the above. You cited the issues. Fed and inflation, it's not left our radar. Earnings going to be fast and furious starting this week. The fear is we're not going to live up to expectations. We had another company this morning, PPG, pre-announced difficult results. We'll probably get more of that. And lurking behind all this are the financial stresses we've seen the last couple weeks around credit and liquidity and the rise in the dollar. So there's a lot for the market to contend with, Rob. Yeah. On the other hand, we're oversold. Sentiment is horrible, which should be interpreted as a positive. And the valuation on the stock market isn't what it was. We entered the year with the price-earnings ratio at 22. It's now 15. So wow. Some of the sting has been taken out.
Yeah, no question about that. Bob, one of the points in your deliberations this week had to do with financial stability concerns that could preempt the Fed's inflation mandate. Tell us more about that.
You know, so the history of central banks, including the Fed, is when inflation's a problem, they target an inflation number and they raise rates with the idea of getting inflation down to that target. But along the way, that rise in rates creates pain and problems, and sometimes something, I use the phrase, goes bump in the night,
yeah,
related to credit or liquidity. And that's the financial stress that we're referring to that we've got to keep our eye on. As you know, a couple of weeks ago, we saw some of that evident in the UK, and we could see more episodes of that in various places.
Interesting. All right, Bob, as we think about inflation and what's going on here in front of us, obviously a lot of considerations, a lot of times good news that we might think would normally be good news is interpreted by the market as bad news. And some of that came last week with the report that non-farm payrolls rose a solid 250,000 plus jobs. Why might that be perceived as negative?
Right. It's too strong. In an environment where inflation is a problem, you want the economy to slow down so the steam of inflation can be taken out of the system. So when you get a reasonably strong number like that, the market doesn't like it because it means the Fed's going to have to go further in raising rates, creating a higher probability of a recession. That's the weird cycle that bad news is good news and good news is bad news means.
Yeah. Obviously, OPEC back in the news last week, Bob. What do you think's ahead for oil prices?
Yeah, I start by saying the U.S. and Saudi Arabia used to be strong partners, and now that's being questioned. The rise in crude oil we've seen in recent weeks is largely attributable to the expectation, now the realization, that OPEC has lowered its production cap by 2 million barrels a day. That's more than many people thought, and it just puts more pressure on oil prices to the upside.
All right. And then lastly, Bob, and you touched on this, but you concluded your comments this week by saying the big test will be earnings. Just are you looking at it in the aggregate, or is there really any sectors that are of particular note to you?
In the aggregate in particular, analysts have lowered their estimates in the last month by 4% for this quarter. That's not a lot. It's fairly typical. And the question is, did they lower them enough in the wake of the economy slowing? So we've got our eye on that, and that's a key factor of the market here in the next few weeks.
Good news, Bob, is we know the end of the story as believers, and we need to stay focused on making sure our trust is in the right place, right?
Amen and amen. God is sovereign, and this too shall pass. We know the end of the story, as you said.
Yeah, very good. All right, Bob. Hey, we always appreciate you weighing in each week with us on the markets. It's helpful, it's reassuring, and we'll look forward to having you back next week, my friend.
My privilege. All the best.
All right. Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. Sign up for his weekly investment commentary at crossmarkglobal.com. All right, back to the phones we go here in our final segment today, 800-525-7000. I probably have room for one or maybe two more phone calls. Andy is in Waco. You've been incredibly patient. Andy, how can I help you?
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks.
My question is this. I'm looking at opening up an account for my grandson. He's 4 years old right now, and we're looking at putting in somewhere around $250 to start it off with.
Yeah.
And just wondering if it would be better to go with some fund like a growth and income fund, small cap or large cap fund, or.
Sure. Well, the first question, Andy, is to define the purpose of these funds. I know it's for your son, who's young. Do you want to earmark it for
grandson, actually.
Or grandson? Okay. Do you want to earmark it for college specifically, or would you like it to be more generally available?
More of a general availability, because we've already got a 529
okay
set up for him that we did 2 years ago.
Yeah. All right. And I assume
so
you would want to
more of a general.
Yeah, very good. I assume you'd want to have control over the funds and decide where and when he gets this, or do you want to go ahead and put it in his name where it automatically becomes his at the age of majority, no matter what?
Keep control of it until he reaches, like 18 or 21, something like that.
But you make the call based on the decisions he's making and so forth at that time, right?
Yeah. And if something happens to me or to my wife, then he would be the beneficiary of the funds. And
Yeah, very good.
Actually make my daughter the beneficiary of the funds until he is of, 21 years or something like that,
Sure. Yeah. And then you just want to communicate your intentions to your daughter at that, prior or when you set this up. But I like that idea because if we put it in a custodial account, then, I certainly pray, as I know you do, that he's making great choices, following the Lord, demonstrating, responsible behavior. But in the event that he's not, the last thing we'd want to do is drop a sum of money in his lap that could reinforce, some of those poor decisions that he might be making. So I think you want to keep this in a joint account in the name of you and your wife. I would probably look, you could put it, I'd put it in a growth mutual fund. If you're thinking growth versus growth in income, I'd probably just go in more of an indexed approach with this, like a total market return index, or you could use one of the robo advisors. I like the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios or Betterment. You'd simply answer a series of questions about the purpose of the money, the age, risk tolerance, that type of thing. And for a very low cost, like 20 basis points, 1/5 of 1%, it would build a portfolio using exchange traded funds that's, largely because of his age, largely growth oriented, but it would capture the broad moves of the market. You wouldn't be trying to pick winners and losers with a particular stock mix or mutual fund. I just think an indexed approach like this makes a lot of sense. And then the nice thing is, Andy, if you continue to make systematic contributions, either monthly or quarterly or annually, every time you do, it would automatically be reinvested with no transaction costs, and it would be rebalanced along the way. So that would probably be my recommendation for a portfolio like this. You can start, with very little, and maybe even $500 or less. And again, it's the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios or Betterment. Those would be two that I think would work pretty well for you.
Okay. All right. Well, you give us quite a bit to consider.
All right. Very good.
Right.
We appreciate your call today, my friend. If we can help you again along the way, please let us know, and may God bless you. Folks, real quick, before we head, we're almost out of time for the program today. Let me tackle one more email. This is a great question that comes to us, and we get this one often, and it has to do with the pros and cons of trust. That is a living trust, and Janet writes to us about that today. Everybody needs a will, and unfortunately, the data tells us that far too many people have not taken that step to put a will in place to express their wishes for how the assets that have been entrusted to them at death are supposed to be distributed. Without it, you die intestate, and the court makes that decision for you. It's critical if you have minor children, because that's going to establish guardianship and name the guardian in that will. So make sure you have a will. But when does it make sense to actually take the additional cost and expense of a trust? Well, the main pro is for a trust is you avoid the probate court. So it passes outside of probate, which means it can be anonymous. The personal matters remain private. You maintain control even after you pass away. So the provisions of the trust through the trustee can be enacted prior to your death if you're incapacitated, or after your death, where if you have a lifetime dependent or you just have specific wishes you want carried out at certain times or when conditions are met along the way, a trust can handle that for you. You prevent a conservatorship if you're incapacitated, and you reduce the possibility of a court challenge. Now, the only downside is it's probably three times more expensive. You'll spend $1,500 or more. There's more paperwork, more record keeping. So I wouldn't do it unless there's a reason for it. But if you have a lot of assets, a lot of real estate, a lifelong dependent, or you just want more control over your assets, that's where a living trust can make a lot of sense. Check with a godly estate, a planning attorney, to help you set it up. Janet, thank you for writing to us. That's going to do it for us today. So thankful you were along with us on MoneyWise. Want to say thank you to my team today. Jim Henry providing research, Mr. Devin Patrick, our engineer and producer, Pat Montague, as always, handling our phones and doing a great job. May God bless you throughout the rest of the day. Hope you'll come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.